Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of SiriusXM Radio. POTUS channel 124. The number to call up as always is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-POTUS to simplify it. Thank you for joining me. This is the fourth edition of Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Can't tell you how honored and privileged I am to have you as listeners and everything. I really, really appreciate the support. Thank you so much. I'm not in a very good mood. And I'm quite sure that I speak on behalf of millions of Americans when I tell you most of us shouldn't be in a good mood. I'm not going to use words like pissed off and all of that other stuff because I do have Hakeem Jeffries, House Democratic leader, coming on the show in just a few minutes. And I want to watch my language and I want to be cool and calm and composed, but I'm disgusted. I'm a little bit different than the Michael Smirkanishes of the world and Chris Cuomo's of the world and the Sean Hannity's and others, all of whom I know, respect, etc., because they live in this lane. I'm just an American citizen just like you, paying attention to what's going on, being a conscientious observer, reading the newspaper, watching the news, and trying not to get flustered and completely, utterly disgusted at what we're seeing here. But it's day 8 of this government shutdown. Hundreds of thousands of people have either been or will be furloughed, if not flat out fired. They'll lose their jobs. They'll lose the ability to pay their bills. And for what exactly? Because folks on Capitol Hill can't come to some kind of accord and get their act together. And me personally, I not only look at it, I'm not trying to play the blame game here because Hakeem Jeffries' work is very, very hard. Just like Joe Manchin, who was on last week before he retired from the Senate, his work was very hard. Just like Governor Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania, his work is very hard. Governor Spencer Cox of Utah, his work was very hard. Senator Lindsey Graham out of South Carolina, all of whom have been guests on this show over the first 3 weeks or so. Their work is very, very hard. I don't mean to impugn or insult anybody, but it's frustrating. It really is. And now that we get down to the nitty gritty and we hear words like, you know, the $1.5 trillion that the Democrats want to get a hold of and what have you, it's a number being used in all likelihood by GOP to attack Democrats and what they want to put back into the budget instead of passing a clean CR. And I get that. And for those of you who may not understand, the $1.5 trillion is not all upfront money to reopen the government immediately, of course. Much of it is projected long-term course from these policy changes over multiple years. So it's partly rhetorical to some degree, bundling immediate funding plus future commitments. We get that part. But nevertheless, it's still something that the American people have to deal with and they have to stomach. And why? Because somehow, some way, a continual resolution, a CR, that was agreed to in March for 6 months couldn't be extended to November, couldn't be permanently resolved to a point where we wouldn't have to worry about federal employees being furloughed or flat out fired. And right now, what we're reading from the Wall Street Journal and other places, what are they saying here? At the heart of the fight that has shut down the federal government are health insurance subsidies. We all know what that's about, okay? And so what are we talking about here? According to the Wall Street Journal, Democrats say they won't budge on their demand that Republicans support the higher federal subsidies they first passed in 2021, which hold down costs for people with Affordable Care Act plans. It's a core issue for the party's base, and Democrats hope their stance will help them score points with voters like Wallace, you know, like, you know, just the average voter out there reading. They was talking about one particular woman, Mrs. Wallace, whose monthly health insurance bill would likely rise sharply if the enhanced payments lapse. Republican lawmakers, on the other hand, have warned that unsustainable government spending is the issue. Over the years, they've repeatedly taken aim at the signature health law of former President Barack Obama. But some congressional Republicans have privately voiced concerns that the GOP will bear the blame if health care costs, rather, sharply increase as the midterm elections loom. You know something's wrong. You know there's something in the water when even Marjorie Taylor Greene speaks up and speaks out against her own party in an effort to get issues like this resolved. Let's hear from her and what she had to say for a second.
Yesterday, I took to social media, and I'm not going to back down on this issue either. Health insurance premiums are out of control. Insurance is out of control in the United States of America. Health insurance, house insurance, car insurance. People can't afford it anymore. And I want Republicans to have a solution, and I'm demanding it. I don't think Democrats should be the one owning this issue because they want socialized health care, and we're $37 trillion in debt, and we can't afford that. However, the reality is many Americans are families especially are paying $2,000 a month for health insurance premiums with high deductibles, and many of them aren't even using their health insurance. They're just having to pay this payment, and it's unforgivable. And to allow Democrats to have some sort of moral high ground on this issue because they're the only ones talking about it, I think is a major failure from the Republican Party.
That's a damn good point she just made. And you don't hear me say that often about Marjorie Taylor Greene, but that's a damn good point she just made because she said, challenging her own party, the GOP, what the hell are you doing allowing the Democrats to have a high moral ground on this issue? You should be talking about this too. Why? Because a bunch of Republican states are using the Affordable Care Act. You know, a whole bunch of people in red states or under Obamacare. They don't want to say Obamacare. That's why we say the Affordable Care Act. But it's Obamacare. That's what it was called. They were certainly calling it that when it came into law. And they were talking about how much it was going to cost our country, the citizens in our country. Call it Obamacare now. And you know there's something in the water when even Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer out of New York, you understand? That, you know, the main Democrat in the Senate. Listen to what he had to say in agreement with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Check this out.
So hold on to your hats. I think this is the first time I said this. But on this issue, Representative Green said it perfectly. Representative Green is absolutely right. Republicans can't sit by and do nothing while American families pay thousands more out of pocket for health care.
Enough. Then where was the urgency to get this done? See, this is where it gets stink. This is where it gets disgusting. Because on one hand, let's call it what it is. Let's keep it a buck, as they say. You have the president of the United States that doesn't really, really mind a shutdown. Because if you find yourself in a position where you can ultimately blame the Democrats, it would be good for you for the midterm elections. Not to mention the fact that this stuff is distractionary in some people's eyes. Because so much stuff comes up the minute you mention the Epstein files that suddenly here he is with another issue to distract your attention away from something else that you were focusing on. Meanwhile, if you're the Democrats, your attitude might be a revolt against voters. Let them have voters' remorse. Let them feel the pain for voting for this man back in office. And as a result, you're thinking about that instead of what's in the best interest of the country. See, my point that I'm making in saying all of this is that there's a legitimate argument that could be made that this could have been resolved months ago, that a shutdown could have been avoided, that it was never necessary. And yes, we've dealt with shutdowns before. That is absolutely true. It has happened before in this country. But that doesn't mean that times haven't changed and that the suffering that has taken place before our very eyes is palpable and paramount enough for us not to just shove it aside. For us not to just wear that level of frustration on our sleeves. For us not to be pretty ticked off at being in this position where you're concerned about your fellow man and woman in America as an American citizen and whether or not they're going to get their act together. But that's where it gets tricky. See, that's where I become a bit different than other people. And I'm not casting aspersions on anybody. I've mentioned a Michael Smirkanish. I mentioned a Sean Hannity. I mentioned a Chris Cuomo. I'll mention an Andrew Wilkow. I'll mention people on CNN and MSNBC. I don't care. I respect all of them. They live in this lane. They do this for a living. I don't. But I love doing this show. And I love talking to the American people because I want you to know I'm an extension of you. I'm like the damn umbilical cord that you put out front and center. I'm so sick of this stuff. That we find ourselves dealing with these issues that could have easily been resolved if you went to work. Didn't they have a recess and a vacation in August? Let me look at my producers and be reminded of that. The hell you doing going on a vacation when a shutdown for the government is looming? The hell you doing taking days off? See, these are the kind of issues, these are the kind of questions American citizens ask when stuff like this comes up. And then, by the way, we're not going to sit up here and just throw shade on the president of the United States. He's not innocent. He's not innocent. I got major problems with him, which I'll get into as the show progresses. I got major, major problems with some of the stuff the president of the United States has been doing. I really, really do. Whether, you know, it's listening to him, looking at one city after another, having the National Guard. It's Los Angeles one minute. It's Portland another. It's Chicago right now. It's Washington, D.C., even though that's over the purview of the federal government. That's him. He has a right to do it in Washington, D.C. I'm looking, threatening Baltimore. Not just National Guards, but military men and women. I'm very, very frustrated. But then you know what I did? And see, this is what makes me a little bit different. Because I'm a bipartisan individual when it comes to this stuff. I'm not taking sides. I said, why is this necessary? What is wrong with this man? You know good and damn well that when it comes to governors, they are the commander in chiefs of their respective state, that you have absolutely positively no business sending the National Guard into their cities, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Memphis, Tennessee, Portland, and now Chicago. Even though with Portland, a judge temporarily blocked it. You know you have no business doing that. Why are you circumventing constitutional authority? What is wrong with you? Why are you doing this? You know you have no business doing this. And then you got pundits who favor him talking about, well, you know what? I mean, Stephen A., come on. I mean, you look at the bodies dropping in Chicago. You see the kind of violence that's been permeating in D.C. or Memphis. Well, that's not the point. I understand something should be done. I think the governors of each state, whatever federal assistance he's willing to provide, if you know you've got crime being pervasive in your streets, you should want federal assistance. But the flip side to it is that while you may want that, and you should want that, that doesn't give him a right to impose it without your blessing. If you are a state in this republic, it's wrong. And then I said, you know something? I'm trying to find out what's wrong with this man. Why is he doing this? Then I thought about the impeachments. One was over the abuse of power. Allegedly, Democrats alleged that Trump pressured Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to announce investigations into Joe Biden and his son in exchange for U.S. military aid. The other one, obstruction of Congress for directing aides and agencies not to comply with House subpoenas. Those are the two ones for the first impeachment. The second impeachment, incitement of the insurrection. And of course, the people of the state of New York versus Donald Trump, 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in first degree. Core allegations, Trump's company logged hush money payments to adult film actress Stormy Daniels as legal expenses to conceal a reimbursement scheme during the 2016 campaign for about $130,000. And then I said, you know something? I'm not justifying his actions. I'm not justifying his pettiness. I'm not justifying his acts of retribution and this revenge tour that he's on. But I can understand why I would annoy the living hell out of people. Why I would annoy the living hell out of him. And so even though it's ridiculous and petty and beneath the presidency, you could also take into account somebody being agitated enough to act that way. You know, I'm going to take a break in a little bit, but not before I talk to my guest. He is the 8th Congressional District of New York. He represents the 8th Congressional District of New York and is serving his 7th term in the United States Congress. Please welcome back to the show, House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Good afternoon. Good evening, sir. How are you? How's everything going?
Good. Great to be with you.
Thank you for coming on the show. I know you're very busy and I appreciate your time. First of all, where do we stand right now with this government shutdown? It's day 8. You held a press conference earlier this afternoon requesting that the House Republicans who've been on vacation since September 19th return to Washington to discuss the extension of the Affordable Care Act. First things first, where do we stand and have you spoken to Speaker Johnson, Mike Johnson?
Speaker Johnson and I haven't spoken today, But we continue to say to him, to Leader Thune over on the Senate side, and to the White House that we will sit down anytime, any place with anyone, either on the Capitol or back in the Oval Office, to reopen the government, which needs to happen, to enact a spending agreement that actually meets the needs of the American people and do it in a bipartisan way. Democrats and Republicans sitting down and coming together to exercise common sense to arrive at the common good for the greatest number of people. And then, of course, we got to address this Republican healthcare crisis because it's devastating people all across the country, whether you live in a blue state, a purple state, or a red state. This Republican healthcare crisis is devastating everyone.
How is it a health? How is it a Republican healthcare crisis? Explain to me, how is it a Republican healthcare crisis instead of all of y'all? I mean, well, all me y'all you, got something to do me, with it, right?
Yeah, well, let me give you five different things. No, they passed this one big ugly bill. Not a single Democrat voted for it. They did this. That was their signature piece of legislation this year. Largest cut to Medicaid in American history. By the way, this is after President Trump said in late January, we're going to love and cherish Medicaid. Really? And then you enact the largest cut to Medicaid in American history, right? That's problem number one. And they did it to reward their billionaire donors with massive tax breaks. That's their bill. Not a single Democrat in the House or Senate voted for it. Problem number two, as a result of this one big ugly bill, these are just the facts. The Republicans have set in motion a possible $536 billion cut to Medicare. They're going to hurt grandmothers and grandfathers and older Americans all across the country. Third problem, they refuse to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits. And as a result of that, tens of millions of Americans are about to experience dramatic increases in their healthcare premiums, copays, and deductibles when healthcare is already too expensive in the United States of America. Problem number four, because of their one big ugly bill, hospitals, nursing homes, and community-based health clinics are closing all across America. This is happening in urban America, rural America, small town America, and the heartland of America. And problem number five is that they've effectively ended medical research in the United States of America. And in their appropriations bills, they're going after the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health. And then they're asking Democrats to sign off on the crisis that they've created.
When you listen to the folks on the GOP side, they'll tell you they're cutting illegals and able-bodied working people. That's specifically what they're talking about, nothing else. Are they accurate in saying that? Or are you saying that they're not telling the truth?
I mean, they are lying to the American people. And listen, the reality is the American people realize that we got testimony earlier today from a young woman, 29 years old, who lives in rural West Virginia, a state that Donald Trump won by 41 points. She is the sole caregiver for her older brother, who's both legally blind and incapable of caring for himself. She cares for him through Medicaid. He's able to actually be cared for in a loving environment because of Medicaid. Now that's at risk. Her hospital in the rural community that she lives is at risk of closing. And on top of all of that, she's a small business entrepreneur. She receives her health care through the Affordable Care Act tax credit program. If we don't extend it, she testified to us earlier today that her insurance costs are going to increase by thousands of dollars per year. She's getting hit on all sides. And what we're saying is that this is not a Republican issue or a Democratic issue. It affects people all across the country. And the crisis is upon us right now. We need to address it right now, along with, of course, Stephen, reopening the government and enacting a bipartisan spending agreement. We're not saying we want to do this on our own. We're saying we need to sit down and have a negotiation, the type of thing that you've been calling for, appropriately so, where we're sitting down and doing our jobs as opposed to House Republicans literally being on vacation the last few weeks, canceling votes last week, canceling votes this week.
So before I get to my next question, let me be very clear. No Democrats on vacation? I just want to make sure I ask a simple question like that, since you talked about House Republicans being on vacation. No Democrats on vacation?
Not a single Democrat on vacation. We were here last week, and we're here this week.
Let me get to this question, though, because I remember the CR that y'all, you know, y'all signed on for in March. That was obviously 6 months. It ended September 30th. If I remember correctly, I don't know whether the number was 12 or 13 times under Biden, you know, y'all signed on. I'm wondering why shut down now, considering the fact that you guys, when it came to a CR, that was something that y'all was willing to push forward when Biden was in office on numerous occasions.
Well, yeah, it's a really important question. I'm glad you asked it. Now, the thing that's interesting is that every single time we reached an agreement when Joe Biden was president, it was Democrats in the House, even though we were in the minority during the last 2 years of the Biden presidency, that provided the votes to keep the government open. We acted in a bipartisan way, consistently found the common ground with Speaker Johnson and before that with Speaker Kevin McCarthy to keep the government open and do it in a way that actually met the needs of the American people. The problem that we confront this time around is that throughout the Trump presidency, basically they've taken a go it alone, my way or the highway approach to governance. We've seen it all over the country. In fact, we've seen it throughout the world, this my way or the highway approach, right? Only I can fix it. And then all of a sudden, we're supposed to believe that Democrats in the minority, in the House and the Senate, are the ones that shut the government down. Republicans have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. He's been acting like the all-powerful Wizard of Oz since January 20th. And now all of a sudden, we shut the government down? I think this is the reason why the American people blame them, because they know they're the ones who made the decision to shut the government down, because they'd rather do that than take care of the health care of everyday Americans.
Well, even since the shutdown, the reality is that the Democrats, I'm not saying that the public is specifically blaming the Democrats, but y'all poll numbers are not that impressive. A matter of fact, I mean, they've been relatively low last time I checked. So when you say that the American people are blaming the Republicans, evidently not enough, because they're pointing the fingers at the Democrats. Wouldn't you say that?
No. What I would say is that, of course, the American people are frustrated, understandably, and I think you've channeled that frustration. That makes sense. They're frustrated because they were promised that the cost of living was going to go down. In fact, they were told by Donald Trump costs were going to go down on day one. Costs ain't going down. They're going up. Electricity bills through the roof. Housing costs through the roof. Groceries through the roof. And now healthcare premiums are about to skyrocket thousands and thousands of dollars in additional costs per year. People are understandably frustrated. They were promised the golden era of America. That's not what we have in this country right now. And the American people know it.
In fairness to you, the Washington Post poll did show that Americans are blaming Trump and the GOP for the shutdown. So I realize that's what you were alluding to. I was alluding to a different poll. I think it was Real Politics or something like that. So I apologize for that. You're absolutely right. Let me get to this question for you. Republicans have called your demand for an ironclad deal on health care an obstructionist tactic. So what's the red line for Democrats regarding the Affordable Care Act, tax credits, and what specific concessions would be required to reopen the government in your estimation?
Yeah, so this is a group of people, Republicans, remember, when they passed their one big ugly bill, largest cut to Medicaid in American history, as I previously mentioned. They also stole food from the mouths of hungry children, seniors, and veterans by gutting the nutritional assistance program in ways never before seen in American history. And all this was done so that they could provide their billionaire donors with massive tax breaks that they made permanent. And now the same group of people are coming to us and saying, well, we can't provide that same level of certainty and stability to working class Americans, to middle class Americans, and everyday Americans. And I just think that that's an unreasonable position. If you can actually do it for your billionaire donors, why should we treat everyday Americans any differently? Now, that said, we've consistently called for bipartisan negotiations. I'm back at the Capitol. We want to sit down and have a conversation with the other side of the aisle so we can reopen the government.
Jeffries,
but we need partners on We need partners on the other side.
So crystallize it for me, yeah. Linda Jeffries. I mean, when you say they won't sit down with you, I mean, how does that work exactly? How does it go? You're going up to Speaker Johnson. He's like, I don't want to talk to you. You're looking for others, and you're saying they're ignoring you. They're ignoring the minority leader in the House. I mean, when you say they won't sit down and talk to you, crystallize, paint a picture for us about how that looks and how that works in the nation's capital. How you can't get people to sit down when you're the Democratic leader of the House.
It's a good question. It makes no sense. It sounds illogical to people, and I understand that. So if we just break down the chronology, Leader Schumer and I demanded a meeting with Donald Trump. He agreed to the meeting. This was in advance of the shutdown. Mm-hmm. He agreed to the meeting. Then he canceled the meeting. And then the American people clearly rose up and said, what are you doing? You're not willing to sit down with leaders in the House and the Senate to try to avoid a government shutdown? So then he has the meeting. That was last Monday. Now, what have we seen from my Republican colleagues subsequent to that? Instead of actually having a follow-up conversation to try to avoid the government from shutting down, what Donald Trump did was release deep fake videos.
Yes.
To try to manipulate what was discussed in that meeting and lie to the American people. Then he went on the golf course. I think it was on day 4. Of the government shutdown. We've never seen anything like this. We've never seen President Obama. We've never seen President Clinton, President Bush. I mean, come on. This guy is on the golf course.
I don't want to sit down with Democratic leaders. I've seen Obama. I didn't say during the shutdown. But President Obama, he spent some time on the golf course now. Come on now. That's true.
Every president has.
Yes.
But not in the middle of a government shutdown.
That's correct.
Lastly, I will just say, I'm giving the chronology, which you appropriately asked for. Republicans canceled votes in the House last week. We were supposed to be in Washington voting. How do you cancel votes in advance of the government shutting down? We've never seen anything like this. And then they cancel votes again this week, which is why I say Republicans are on vacation, literally, spread out throughout the country and the rest of the world. They need to get back to work so that we can resolve this issue related to reopening the government and addressing the Republican healthcare crisis.
Reopening the government, is it really simply about healthcare? Is the healthcare issue the prominent issue with the shutdown in your estimation?
Well, the healthcare issue definitely is a critical issue, in part because what we're dealing with right now is the expiration of the Affordable Care Act tax credits, which the Republicans initially said was a side issue. In fact, Mike Johnson said that in the White House meeting. I think he used a more fancier word. He said extraneous. Excuse me. This is not an extraneous issue. This is central to the well-being of the American people and their quality of life. And premiums, co-pays, and deductibles are about to skyrocket, and that's in front of us right now. Open enrollment starts in a matter of weeks. People are getting notices as we speak that their costs are doubling, tripling, or quadrupling. Now Republicans are finally starting to acknowledge, well, maybe this is a crisis that we better deal with right now. We've been saying that for weeks, It's a crisis that hospitals, nursing homes, and community-based health centers are closing across the country, including in rural America. And keep in mind, Stephen A lot of what's happening literally is happening in red states. This isn't a political issue for us.
I brought that up earlier. Yeah.
The top 10 states in terms of Affordable Care Act enrollees are all red states that Donald Trump won. We're fighting for Americans because it's the right thing to do.
If shutting down the government is due, obviously, to health care and all the subsidies, are you admitting that Obamacare may not have been the answer? Is that a fair question?
No, listen, I think the Affordable Care Act has been a dramatic success, and the American people know it, which is why more than 70% of the American people want to see the Affordable Care Act tax credits extended. There's still more work to be done here in the country. And there's a variety of, you know, there's employer-based health insurance, and there's work to be done in that area. You know, there are things that can be done with respect to improving the efficiency of Medicare and Medicaid. That doesn't mean gutting Medicaid and ending it as we know it, And we're open to exploring anything that can be done in good faith. And the same is the case with respect to the Affordable Care Act. No one's perfect. Nothing is ever perfect. But we shouldn't be ripping health care away from tens of millions of Americans.
I looked at some numbers, Leader Jeffries, and this is a U.S. economic snapshot for the fall of 2025. It says GDP growth is at 3.8% increase. It says inflation is at 2.7%, moderating toward the Fed's 2% target. The unemployment rate is at 4.3%, still low, but creeping up slightly from early in the year. The federal funds rate is at 4 to 4.25%. All right. That's considered stable. I'm just looking at some of these things and I'm saying when we consider the state of affairs that exist in this nation, people look at economics first. I don't care what anybody says. They think about economics and they think about safety. Some people will look at some of these numbers with Trump. The federal debt is at approximately $35 trillion, 122% of GDP, obviously. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, people are saying that's a relatively successful administration. How do you argue against that?
I think the American people view their economic circumstances through what they are paying for their day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month expenses.
Okay.
And that was the reality of the November 2024 election, where despite the fact that you had a lot of macroeconomic numbers, many of which you cited, that were relatively strong, but when the American people thought about their day-to-day lives in terms of what they're paying for, which is the case right now, what am I paying for gas? What am I paying for groceries? What am I paying for goods? What am I paying for housing? Why is my electricity bill skyrocketing? Why are these healthcare premiums out of control? I can't even afford to go to a doctor for myself, for my children, for my families. I certainly can't afford to purchase a new home, and that's the case for many young people all across the country. I'm barely struggling to pay rent. Donald Trump's core economic promise, remember, all of last year, he said, I'm going to lower costs on day one. He didn't have to say that. That's what he said. I'm a lower cost on day one. Costs aren't going down. They are going up. Inflation is on the way up. America's too expensive and the cost of living is too high. So my view is, look, the American people don't have to take my word for it. How do you feel about the economy? Is your life more affordable? Are you getting ahead? Can your children go further than you went? Which is always the American dream. The problem in the country right now is people are working hard, people are playing by the rules, but they can't afford to live a comfortable life. That's not a good economy, that's a bad economy.
Please address the claims made by Vice President J.D. Vance, House Speaker Johnson, and other Republicans that Democrats are pushing to provide health care benefits for undocumented immigrants. What's your direct response to that?
Yeah, that's a stone cold lie, and Republicans know it. Because federal law is very clear. Taxpayer dollars cannot be used for Medicare, for Medicaid, for the Affordable Care Act in terms of providing services to undocumented immigrants. Our fight is for hardworking American taxpayers, period, full stop. And here's why they know they're lying. We had that Oval Office meeting last Monday. It lasted for over an hour. This issue of undocumented immigrants getting health care, it came up for less than 10 seconds. And it was dismissed because they know it's a lie. It's a fake and phony issue. They didn't even bother litigating it in the Oval Office meeting. But they're trying to weaponize it, and the American people aren't buying it.
Last question.
Because we're not trying to change federal. We're not trying to change federal law. There's nothing that they can point to say, Stephen A., that we're trying to change federal law. This is about everyday Americans, working class Americans, and middle class Americans.
I'm interested in transitioning to this subject because I know you got to go, and I thank you for the time you've already gave me. You didn't have to give that, and I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Let me get to this, though, in regards to ICE. We know that Trump is, you know, sent the National Guard in Washington, D.C. It's federal, you know, federal jurisdiction. He could do that. Tried to send it in Portland. That got Nick sent it to L.A., Memphis, now Chicago. I want to know, number one, your thoughts about that. And number two, what role do you feel the hostile rhetoric
between both sides of the aisle has played in this kind of acrimony that I believe has now sifted into the streets of America, and what level of culpability the Democrats should bear along with the Republicans in your eyes?
Well, let me say that, one, political violence in any form, in any fashion, directed at anyone, regardless of your ideological views, is unacceptable in America, unacceptable. And we need Democrats and Republicans and independents, we need everyone to come together. And we can battle it out in terms of a contest of ideas. Things should never turn violent. That's not who we are as a country. That's not who we should become. And I think the responsibility falls on all of us to try to move the country forward, not turn back the clock, to try to bring people together as opposed to rhetoric that's sometimes used by people that tear us apart. In terms of unleashing U.S. troops in American towns and cities and counties, the American people aren't down with that. We need to support our local law enforcement in Chicago, in Portland, in New York City, in Washington, D.C., across the country. One of the problems, to tell you the truth, Stephen A., with the current partisan Republican spending bill is it actually cuts $500 million in grants to local law enforcement. One of the things we've said to our Republican colleagues is restore those grants. Like, why are they asking us to support their efforts to gut public safety efforts in the United States of America? And that's what we should be doing. Like, the cities and the states and the federal government should be partnering to lift up public safety for everyone, as opposed to, again, Donald Trump, my way or the highway, just unleashing troops on communities across the country in ways that the American people are understandably having an adverse reaction to.
I can talk to you all day, but I know you got to go. You got bigger things to deal with than talking to me. Obviously, I hope the shutdown gets resolved quick, fast, and in a hurry. I hope our streets are safe. I hope you guys can come together and find a resolution. But House Leader Hakeem Jeffries, I thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Once again, coming on to the show, you know you're welcome on anytime. I really appreciate it, my man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for what you do. Great to be with you.
Thank you. One and only Hakeem Jeffries, House Democratic Leader, right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter with Stephen A. over at Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. 866-966-6887. 866-96-POTUS. That is the number to call up. He said a few things. I got a few things to follow up with. I'm just getting started. He's finished, but I'm just getting started. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with your calls and more in a minute.